Tonight, we're going to do church number 6. And next week we'll do Laodicea, probably of the 7 churches. It's the one that we're most familiar with. But tonight we'll do Philadelphia. Does anybody know the meaning of the word Philadelphia? Brotherly love. It certainly is not fitting of Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, because I don't think there's any love in that town. That is not one of my favorite towns. But Philadelphia, brotherly love. The name came from two brothers who ruled this city, and they were so fond of each other and liked each other that it was known as brotherly love, and eventually they changed the name of the city to Philadelphia in their honor. Of the 7 churches, Philadelphia is the youngest church and the youngest city of the 7 that we've been studying. There was a big earthquake in about AD 19, and it made a ruins of the city. It was rebuilt. And there's a couple of things that we'll see plays into this letter. The Romans came along and thought it would be nice to give the city of Philadelphia, because it had recovered from all of its problems, a new name. And so they named it the New City of Caesar. Well, this went over like a lead balloon. And so it wasn't very few years that the name Philadelphia came back, and they rejected the new name and moved right back to their old name. So let's start looking at this letter. There's one other thing that's very important that we're going to see immediately, was Philadelphia was an open door. We're going to see this sentence in the next few minutes, to Greek culture. From all accounts, Philadelphia was known for its vineyards, its grapes, its wine. And for some reason, we always put culture and wine together. And so it was thought that this was a door that would be open for the Greek culture to move into the churches and vice versa. So that's a little bit of the background to Philadelphia. So as when John wrote this letter, we're going to see that it certainly pertains a couple of things very important to why he mentioned it. I appreciate what Jim read. You know, as we've discussed here, it's always nice to know that somebody of somewhat note backs you up, even though I'd rather be somebody other than Ford particularly, but he certainly is on the mark, that the message for the church is not for a period of time. The message is for them, number one, for us, number two, and then if it happens to fit a period of time, that's really, really nice. So please keep that in mind. All right, somebody start us out with Revelation, the 3rd chapter, and let's start with verse 7. Anybody?
And to the angel of the church in Philadelphia write, He who is holy, who is true, who has the key of David, who opens and no one will shut, and who shuts and no one opens.
Okay, let's stop there. Say, to the angel of the church, he writes, these are the words of him who is holy and who is true. Now, who are we talking about?
That would be Christ.
Remember the principle. Anytime you're in trouble with Revelation, go back to the central message, which is about what?
Jesus Christ.
So these are the words of Christ, who is holy, and certainly he is true, who holds the keys of David. What he opens, no one can shut, and what he shuts, no one can open. How would you interpret that?
I think immediately the door of the ark.
Okay. All right. Who opened the door?
Jesus.
Who shut the door?
Jesus.
Now, since Jim always brings up controversial things, Not James, Jim. Have you ever wondered why they waited 7 days before the rain started? Pardon?
Somehow testing the faith again?
Testing the faith of who?
Noah.
Yeah, he still had to wait.
Pardon?
He still had to wait.
Okay. So you would say that there's eight people inside, so God's testing their faith for 7 days.
I don't think so, because they worked on that 120 years.
Okay. So we got a
7 days wouldn't make any difference.
We got a could be, and I don't think so. All right. What other reason would they wait for 7 days?
God's last plea to have more people come on, give people a chance.
Oh, that kind of makes God nice, doesn't it? Okay.
That's basically what I was going to say too.
How could they have gotten on?
Yeah.
Pardon?
How would they get on if God shut the door?
That's a good question. I'm glad you asked that, James. So now let's set a picture. See, Mom, how they'd get me off the subject so easy. I try to stay on it. What would have happened if one person during those 7 days thought this thing through and said, you know, I think I've made a big time mistake. I think I've miscalculated, and I think that I ought to get on that boat. So on Wednesday, they go up and they knock on the door and they say, let me in. What do you think would have happened?
The door would have opened.
Pardon?
The door would have opened.
Who said that?
Okay.
We have the story at the wedding feast.
Once God shut the door, he wouldn't open it.
With the guests and...
Before I was a teenager, I heard a sermon on that. I can tell you where I was sitting in the pew at the time I heard it. I don't remember the preacher, but I'm sure where I was sitting. And he made a very nice graphic picture of just exactly what happened. And I think it was this young child or somebody was up there crying to come in. And they were saying, too late, you got to make your decision now before the time of probation closes. That's what I heard.
Did it touch your heart?
It kind of made me feel like it was rather a callous thing to do to me.
Okay. So again, person knocks, going to the ark on Sunday, on Wednesday. No rain, no nothing. A person comes up and he knocks on the door and says, I think I've made a mistake. I would like to get in the ark. What would have happened?
Isn't that the same when the angels went to Abraham and said that they were going to burn Sodom and Gomorrah, and Abraham asked him, would you burn or
50? Okay. Did he stop too soon?
Yeah.
See. What would your God do?
I think he'd thrown him a rope ladder and said, come on up. If he couldn't open the
door. Why, he'd have swung that door so open so fast, it wouldn't have been funny.
It would
have been. See. What a picture we have of God who says, I'm sorry, it's too late. Now, the wedding feast, go back and study the consequences of that whole story. So, God does what He always does. He waited to see if He could save one more person. None wanted. Now, when did they want to get into the ark?
After.
That's right. After. See. So that's a perfect example of how we picture God, who says, I'm going to shut the door, and if you change your mind, it's too late. Do we do that to our children?
Yep.
Huh? What? What do we do to our children?
We give them an ultimatum.
Oh, okay. That's what I thought.
It's too late now.
No. See? All right. Don't get me off, Jim. These are the words of Him is holy and true who holds the key of David. What He opens, no one can shut. What He shuts, no one can open. What does this picture Christ as?
In command.
Of authority. Yeah. Is authority bad?
No.
Could be. But in this case, it certainly isn't. Somebody look up Isaiah 22:22. This was a promise given to the children of Israel. And when John's writing this to the church of Philadelphia, he's drawing from the Old Testament. Isaiah 22:22.
I will give him complete authority under the king. The descendant of David, he will have the keys of office. What he opens, no one will shut. What he shuts, no one will open.
Okay. So here we have a direct quotation from the book of Isaiah. So here's Jesus. He's in authority. He is the true one. He is the holy one. And he holds in his hands the power and the authority. All right, somebody read verse 8.
I know your deeds. Behold, I have put before you an open door which no one can shut, because you have a little power and have kept my word and have not denied my name.
Okay. Now remember when I said that it was looked upon historically that Philadelphia was an open door to reach for culture, because they were wine growers. They had a chance to witness and to be culture. Well, this is what John is drawing on right here. Your church in Philadelphia, you are an open door. Notice he's very complimentary. In most of the churches he says, I really like what you're doing, but he adds that word, but here's what you're doing wrong. With this church, he's really praising them. So he says, I know your deeds. See, I have placed before you an open door that no one can shut. I know that you have little strength, yet you have kept my word and have not denied my name. Is this a compliment?
Yes.
Yes, absolutely. Now my question is, how was the door open, and how would you take that meaning to be?
Door of opportunity.
Door of opportunity. Opportunity for what, Leroy?
For spreading the Christian message.
Okay.
Jesus Christ.
Okay.
Yes, that's the door of salvation, isn't it?
Okay.
And maybe open means they were very receptive of Jew and non-Jew, because there were some problems about that in the early church.
Okay. All right. Do we have a door of opportunity to the world today?
Yeah, we sure do. I would hope so.
Okay. Well, I believe we do.
More so in this country than any of the rest of the country.
Okay. Now, what do we do with that open door?
Ignore it.
Well, no, I don't think what we do. What should we do with it?
Evangelism.
Okay. What some other ways do we go through that open door to witness?
Missionaries.
Missionaries? What other ways?
Kindness.
Kindness? Where's that right?
Well, helping people in the community with food.
Love your brothers yourself.
That's simple stuff. We want hardcore stuff. All right, let's go to evangelism. Now, how do we evangelize through this open door?
with love.
Okay, evangelistic meetings.
And to a large degree, we steal sheep.
Okay, we're a sheep stealer.
Okay.
How do you think that Jesus wanted these people to go through this open door? How did He do it? He was here, exactly, He was here for 3.5 years, so what method did He use? How many evangelistic tents did He put up?
Daily. No tents, but every time He opened His mouth, He was, revealing the kingdom.
How many times did He go in gathering? Do remember in gathering, don't you, Ma?
Maybe once when He got that quarter out of the fish's mouth.
Scott? I thought you were going to say something.
Yes, I am.
Okay.
It's a matter of, to me, yes, there's a place for a tent meeting or something like that. There's a place for gathering and singing and everything. But evangelizing, to me, is the one-on-one. Someone's in need, helping them, having the opportunity if the subject comes up or whatever, just to praise God or give testimony of Him. But by our actions alone, acknowledging Him.
Okay. All right. Anybody like to add to that? What do you mean by kindness, Kay?
You see someone that needs something, you take care of it.
Okay.
He never told anyone it was their fault. They were there.
What do you mean by that?
He didn't condemn anybody within the hierarchy of the church.
Okay.
But he said that He wants us to be recognized by other people by the way we treat each other.
Okay. Isn't that one of the tests of discipleship? If you've done it under one of the least of these, you've done it under me.
You have to read the whole sentence, Jim. If you've done it unto one of the least of these, you've done it to me. If you've enrolled them in the Bible course.
Oh.
If, you see. Now, let's tie this together. He says, I've opened a door of opportunity that no one can shut. How can that, why can that door not be shut?
The door that Christ opened was the door to God.
Okay.
He is the way to the Father.
Mm-hmm.
He opens that door, and there is no way that that can be shut because He is the open door.
Okay. If there's a door of opportunity for witnessing, how can that door not be shut?
It will be attempted to be shut by legalism or what have you. But as long as there's people who are committed, regardless of life or health or death, it will be shut. And it's happened in the years past with, you know, the Waldensons and all the rest gone before us.
Okay. What do you think will keep that door open?
Same thing that would have opened the door to the ark. The love of the Father.
Okay.
Christ.
Yes.
Okay.
As long as there's someone to be reached, that door must stay open to give that person the opportunity.
Okay. Do you think that's the kind of door that He's talking about? Is the door a door on the big picture of salvation, or is the door our witnessing that can't be shut?
I think it's the door of witnessing.
Yes.
Is it the door to that He opened by His death?
He opened the door to heaven for us by dying. And that's done, so nobody can ever take that away.
Have you ever been around somebody that's had something very good happen to them? And they share it. And they share it. And they share it. And they share it. And finally you kind of get to a point where you really say, I hope something different happens. What happens when Jesus Christ touches your life? And He brings to you the peace of salvation, the peace of hope, the peace of love. And as that is renewed in a daily experience with Him, how can somebody ever shut that door? Now, if you're out preaching doctrine, can that door be shut?
I hope so.
Can it be shut? Have you ever had it shut on you? Well, certainly. Oh, here comes that guy again on that seventh-day Sabbath. Slam. Am I correct? See, that door can be shut. Oh, there they come again. That lecture on what to eat and not to eat. Slam. How can the door ever be shut when you are having a relationship with Jesus Christ and naturally you are a happy, caring, loving person?
Paul learned that.
Absolutely. See? Because you are who you are. And no wonder Jesus says, if you have that relationship with me, then the natural consequences of that will be just what Jim said. When you come across somebody's thirsty, what do you do? Do you check their religious faith first? Do you see which church they go to? Do you see if they're American or non-American? What do you do? Give them the water. What if they're hungry? Give them food. See? And we miss that because the door that we try to witness through is what we think is fundamental. This is what is right, and this is what you should do, and this is what is the correct thing to do. And the person is sitting there saying, I'm so sick of that. I'd like for somebody to feed me.
You mentioned doctrine.
Yes.
And the door can be shut. I wasn't exactly sure what you were referring to, whether it's what other people say or how they react. But I'm reminded of an event where I was with a person in a vehicle driving down the road, and he referred to your God, and he completely rejects God and Christ. And I think of the fact that no matter, you know, what I would have said or done, which for the most part I kept quiet and acknowledged the fact that yes, that's my God, and yes, I believe in Christ, but I get the sense the door is not a door that is open or closed by someone else. The door's within me. And so it's Christ in me because He's opened that door. I've been willing. And that's the door.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. What will move people? Is it doctrine? It's Christ. That He loves, that He cares. And then once that relationship is developed, the rest falls into place. must remember the very people that paid tithe, that kept the Sabbath, ate the right food, when the Creator of the universe walked among him, they never recognized him, and they wanted to kill him, and they did kill him. So witnessing comes to introduce them to God. Without that, we have nothing. So here's an example. He says, I know your deeds. Were these good people? They were good. They were doing the right thing. I placed before you an open door that no one can shut. I know that you have little strength, yet you have kept my word and have not denied who I am. Why would they have little strength?
Hopefully they're relying on God's strength.
Okay. Why would they have little strength?
Maybe relying on their own strength.
Did Jesus ever get tired? Did Jesus ever get to a point of, we don't like to use the word discouraged, but did he ever get tired and wonder if it was worth it? Jesus ever cry?
Yeah, he got discouraged.
Did Jesus ever say, why me? Certainly, in the Garden of Gethsemane he did.
So that's what this means here, is that if they only have a little power, they don't. I didn't quite understand how it was.
Okay. There's several ways you could take it. I take it that they did uphold Christ's name. They did uphold Him. He recognized their deeds. But as sometimes as all we get is that they had little strength, they were getting tired.
Okay.
And so He comes along and says, as He always does, I love you, I encourage you, come back to me, let's renew the friendship. He's very complimentary to this church. This is the only church he is complimentary to.
The idea that there's probably a small group. There wasn't a whole big group of Christians there, because the entire city of Philadelphia had many gods.
Mm-hmm.
They had this, I forget the name of about that long for one god that they had. They had the Greeks were trying to present their god. Even Philadelphia was because of the volcanic age, there was a good grape growing thing, great wine country.
Mm-hmm.
And so they had their gods to the wine.
Mm-hmm.
I had this wine god. Can't you see yourself, old wine god, great god of wine, you know? And so that these group of people were holding fast with all of these other different gods that was around.
Well, what's interesting, Leroy, they were holding battle with their own people. Most likely, the Christians that this letter was written to were not even in control of their own synagogue.
No.
It's pretty well thought, and we'll see in a minute where he talks about you'll be a pillar. There's a reason of that, because these were probably outsiders in their own church congregation, to add everything else. Because he talks about the synagogues of Satan, but we'll look at it. So not only were they fighting heathenism, they were fighting their own people, because we think these people were more or less on the outside of the synagogue bunch. Certainly would never happen to us today. Yet you have kept my word and have not denied my name. I will make those who are in the synagogue of Satan, who claim to be Jews, though they are not, but they are liars, I will make them come and fall down at your feet and acknowledge that I have loved you. How would you interpret that one? Is our great reason for following Christ is that someday the heathens will say, you were right and I was wrong. Is that a great motivation?
Not according to this text.
Okay. Okay. Is this a text that we could use to say that Israel at the end will be honored by everybody? Because a lot of churches use this text along with many others. The answer to that's no. Okay. But I don't want to get into this one because I want to finish up.
Let me read this sentence as West translated.
Okay.
And they shall come to know experientially that as for myself, I loved you.
Okay, I like that one. See, the question is, God never stops loving us. He never stops loving us. Don't care what we do, He never stops loving us. Does a parent stop loving their child? Dale Carnegie tells a story of about a gangster in Chicago that killed 11 people. And as he went to the electric chair, his mother stood outside and she was crying, and her words was, "I don't know why they're doing this to my son. He never hurt anybody." God never stops loving. Verse 11. Somebody read that.
I am coming soon. Keep safe what you have so that no one will rob you of your victory prize.
Okay, let's stop there. I am coming soon. A threat or a promise? Is it a promise to everybody?
We didn't read verse 10.
Yeah, I'm running out of time. I am coming soon. A threat or a promise?
Promise.
Promise? What if you're on the other side?
Depends on what side
you're on. That's right. To some, that could be a threat. Hold on to what you have so that no one will take your crown. Can you lose your crown?
Yes.
Got a yes? Got another yes?
You have to refuse it.
Okay. All right.
Someone else steal your crown.
Okay. How can they do that?
Well, I think it can mean that they don't necessarily receive your crown. Maybe just by their behavior or their influence.
Okay. Is there examples in the Bible of people who had something and it was replaced by somebody else? How about King Saul? Did he have it all?
He had it all.
Chosen by God Himself. And who was he replaced with?
David.
That's right. How about Esau? Placed by Jacob. How about Judas? See, someone can come and take that crown. But who gives them permission?
Yourself.
By the way, do we work to get the crown, or is the crown already ours?
Crown is ours, and we become victorious.
Yeah. That's the irony of the whole thing, is the crown is already ours. Some choose to give it up, which is unbelievable, because we go back to the very beginning with Satan in heaven, who chose to give it up. That's the mystery of sin. Him who overcomes, I will make a pillar in the temple of my God. See, that's where the thought comes from, that these were outside the sanctuary. They wasn't on the in crowd. And God's promise to them is, you might lose here, but in the big picture, you will be a foundation of the entire synagogue, the entire sanctuary, the entire heavens. You will be a pillar. You will be outstanding there, maybe not here.
I have a question.
Yes.
It said that God would keep them from their hour of testing.
Mm-hmm.
Was this church protected then? They didn't have the persecution of the other churches?
Okay. What happened? Was it, which church was it? We said Sardis. No, it wasn't. Sorry, Smyrna, I think. That Smyrna, get ready. You're going to go through the hard times. You are going to be tested. Why did he not hold test these people? What does he mean by this statement? Does this mean everything's just going to be rosy? No problems? No sickness? So what did he mean by that? She says, she wants to go back up to verse 6. I will keep you from the hour of trial that is going to come upon the whole world to test those who live on the earth. So how would you interpret that?
Well, it doesn't sound like the test is... For them, it's for the people on the earth.
Yeah. Whenever you talk about people of the earth, that means wicked. Mm-hmm. The wicked people. Yeah. There was something about this church, because they were a witness, because they lived in a multicultural, and they were going to move outside, that they would not go through the things like Smyrna, which stood up in that city and did face persecution. So there's something about this church that was not going to have to go through that time. But it did not mean individually that everything would just go just fine. There would not be any individual problems. There are always, in fact, the people that's been closest to God throughout the Bible were the ones that had the biggest problems.
It's kind of like us in the U.S. We haven't had the persecution that some other countries have had.
Mm-hmm.
Been kind of protected.
Mm-hmm. Well, we've been a protected nation all the way around until 9/11. We lost 3,000 people, which is tremendous. Russia in World War II lost 25 million people in their country land. You know, so
they killed themselves.
Few were starving to death. Lots of them did. So it becomes a protected country. So this church was protected. Only probably because of the culture and the outlay, they were not going to face that final temptation that, say, Smyrna went through. Okay?
I'm going to jump in a minute.
Yes.
On the testing, because for a while, Valeri, I forget his last name.
Chernobyl.
Yes, okay. He and I were working together and talked a lot.
Mm-hmm.
Told of how in the Ukraine, government officials along with church officials would come by the homes and give the head of the household an opportunity to sign the papers to join the church. Failing to do so, they would arrest them on the spot and put them in prison. And he describes how his mother, grandmother, and other ladies would take turns taking food and visiting these husbands that were in prison.
Mm-hmm.
I view them as having a relationship with God. The door was open through them because of their lives, because of what was described. Yet, that was a trial. So, I guess the testing, I'm not exactly sure whether it's the testing the relationship you have with Christ, or whether they're referring to actual...
Events like that. Let's go to where it says, I will write on him the name of my God, the name of the city of my God, the New Jerusalem, which is coming down out of heaven from my God, and I will write on him my new name. Can you see how this new name would appeal to the people in Philadelphia? Because remember, they had just gone through this where the Roman government came in and said, we're going to give you a new name, and they absolutely rejected it because they did not want to become the new city of Caesar. They liked to be Philadelphia. So how would you interpret this meaning to them that we got a name of the God, name of a city, and a new name? How is this comforting news?
God has promised them a residence in the new heaven.
Okay.
Coming in the new Jerusalem.
Okay. How about new name? Somebody look up Isaiah 62, verse 2. And somebody look up Ezekiel 48. I think it's the last verse in Ezekiel. Somebody look up Ezekiel 48, last verse. Somebody look up Isaiah 62:2.
Jerusalem nations will see you victorious.
Now, which one is this?
That's Isaiah.
Okay.
62:2. Jerusalem, the nations will see you victorious. All their kings will see your glory. You will be called a new name, a name given by the Lord Himself.
Okay. Somebody else have 62:2? Read it.
Yeah, 62:2.
Yeah.
The nations will you see your righteousness,
okay,
and all kings your glory. You will be called by a new name that the mouth of the Lord will bestow. You will be a crown of splendor in the Lord's hand, a royal diadem in the hand of your God.
Okay. In Isaiah, which is the same in Revelation, what will the new name be? What will that new name have a meaning for?
Only for us, the individual. I thought we all had different ones, and it describes what we have.
And what was the characteristic of this new name? Read the first part again.
Nations will see your righteousness.
Okay. So when you have a God gives you a new name, what will people see in you?
Jesus Christ.
Your righteousness?
Christ's
righteousness. See, again, it's that relationship. People will not look to you as nice, law-abiding Christians. The new name is they look at you and they see God. New Jerusalem. Who has Ezekiel 48, last verse? Last verse in the book of Ezekiel. This is the way he finishes his letter.
The city shall be 18,000 cubits round about. And the name of the city from that day shall be The Lord is There.
Okay. That's the new name of Jerusalem. Now, fair question, because I only ask fair questions. What is your motivation to get to heaven? Is it to escape hell?
One.
Is that a good reason?
Well, yeah. We shouldn't judge our reason.
Oh, I think we can.
Well, now, from the text we just read, it says that Christ is going to be in that city. So that would be a marvelous place to live.
Okay. So what? Go ahead. So what is your motivation to be there?
We will have a marvelous form of fellowship and affection. It'll be a beautiful place to be.
To be with the Lord.
Yes.
That is the only motivation. I had a lady in Hadley when I was teaching Sabbath school. I was very young. She says, "Do you think there will be water skiing in heaven?" And I said, "I have no earthly idea." She says, "Well, if there's not water skiing in heaven, I don't think I want to be there."
Well, I heard somebody say if there's going to be girls there, they didn't want to be there.
And I said, she says, if there's not water skiing in heaven, I don't want to be there. And I said, I don't think you have anything to worry about. See?
Really?
Desire of Ages says it's not the fear of punishment nor the hope of a reward that leads the disciples on. They behold the unmatchless love of Jesus and it moves their heart. So there is only one motivation to understand was when the city comes, the new name is the Lord is there. We become a pillar by our witness for to the universe of our trust and our relationship with the Lord. And our new name comes from knowing Him. Because the righteousness of Christ will come out of us and we are a new person. And the glory of heaven is to spend the time with the one that you love. Everything else is a byproduct. Father in heaven, we think of this church of Philadelphia. It was a witness for you. You had only nice things to say about it. You recognized that even through their struggle, at times they had little strength. But that wasn't a problem. Because as they talked and worshiped with you, they continued to shine through that open door, your unmatchless love, your graciousness, and your kindness. May people, as we come in contact with them, not see us as a member of a denomination, not see us as those that keep several things, but when they look at us, they see someone who God has blessed, and they see that love shown through our lives. This is the witness. This is what keeps the open door. Thank you, Father, for what you've done in our lives, and we're thankful that we've had this hour to spend with you. In Jesus' lovely name we pray. Amen.